بسم الله. السلام عليكم and good morning. Thank you. So by just listening to the correspondence between Azzedine and David, you see how much common Muslims have, how much Muslims and Unitarians have in common. This makes you think, I'm not really sure if Unitarians should be called Muslims with a small M and Muslims should be called Unitarians with a small U. So today I'm going to talk very briefly in about 20, maximum 25 minutes, because it's very hard to give a mic to a preacher and expect them to finish on time, right? So if I go past my time, so please somebody pull the mic or fire two shots in the air. Just do something, okay? So there are so many misconceptions out there about Islam. So because of the time constraint, I'm going to talk only about the 570 most common misconceptions about Islam, okay? So, yeah. The reason why we sent out this pamphlet to different places was because in September of last year, about this time last year, only about a week before I arrived in the city, a Muslim lady was leaving the mosque with a scarf and she was physically and verbally attacked by three teenage girls. So that was the reason why I wanted to send this pamphlet out, because there are so many misconceptions about Islam out there, especially if you are watching the news, especially Fox News. I mean, it's terrible. It's terrible. So what I really advise people to do is to always read and think for themselves. Don't take whatever the media says for granted. So I'm going to start with some quick facts about Islam. Number one, Islam is the second largest faith in the world. It depends if Catholics consider themselves to be part of Christianity or not. Because if they are, then Christianity is number one. If Catholics think they are a different faith, then Islam is number one. Okay, too bad. Islam is the fastest growing religion in the world. There are 57 Muslim countries in the world. There's about 1.6 billion people in this world, which means that one out of every four in this world are Muslim. If Islam is too bad for women, then there are three out of every new Muslims are women. 75% of new Muslims are women. Arabs make up only 18% of the world's Muslim population. So Arabs are actually a tiny minority in Islam. Most Muslims are not Arab. There's a single country by the name of Indonesia in Southeast Asia. This single country has more Muslims than all Arab countries, 24 countries put together. There are about 1.5 million Muslims in Canada. So before I talk about the misconceptions, a brief introduction to what Islam really is. Linguistically, Islam comes from the root word salama, which basically means purity and submission and peace. So if someone submits to God and they are peaceful, then they will live a life of purity in this life and a life of happiness in the next life. So this is the linguistic meaning. The technical meaning is someone who has faith in God and does good things. And we believe as Muslims that all prophets came exactly with the same teaching. Have faith in God, serve God alone, and be a good guy, be a good person. Jesus said the same thing. Moses did the same thing. David said the same thing. Isaac, Noah, Abraham, all of them said exactly the same thing. If you don't believe me, just read the Ten Commandments. The first four say, worship God, serve Him alone. From 5 to 10, don't kill, don't lie, don't steal, be a good guy. So they all agree on this. So we as Muslims believe that if someone, regardless of what they call themselves, if they call themselves Christian, Unitarian, Jews, Hindus, Buddhists, if each of these believes in God and they try to be good people, then they are Muslims with a small M. So for someone to be a Muslim with a capital M, they believe in six things and they do five things. They say that there is one God and they believe in Muhammad and all the prophets. They pray five times a day. They give the charity. They fast at Ramadan. And they go for the pilgrimage if they are physically and financially able to. The six articles of faith, the belief in God, the belief in the angels, the belief in all the prophets of God, we love them and we respect them. We show respect to all of them. And we even name our children after them. We have so many Moseses in the Muslim community. We have so many Davids and so Dawuds, so many Abrahams and so many Moseses and so many Marys. We love these figures and we name our children after them. We also believe in the scriptures, in the Torah, the Gospel, the Psalms of David, and the scrolls of Abraham, as well as the Quran. And we believe in free choice, faith, and destiny. And we believe that God sent prophets to show us the way and left everything completely up to us. And this leads to the last one, which is there's a day of judgment and everybody will be accountable for their actions in this life. So the points that have been requested to cover are, number one, that to talk about the violence in the media, that Muslims are violent people. Number two, Muslims are trying to take over the world. So you will have this belief if you've watched Fox News. Number three, Muslim silence condones terrorism. Muslims don't talk against violence. And number four, Muslims hate gays and lesbians. And number five, Muslim women oppress oppress women. So, when we start by talking about violence, it has not always been like this. If you watch old movies, the movies produced in the 1950s, 60s, 40s, Muslims, the perception of Muslims was that they were Aladdin people. So Muslims, those people who were living there, they have flying carpets and genies and magic lamps. So that was always the perception. Back then, who was the enemy? Is there anyone here from Germany? Right? Italy, Japan. Those were the enemies back then, the bad people. 20 years later, it was the Vietnamese. 20 years later, the Russians, the Soviets, right? The Cold War. 20 years later, the Muslims. Maybe 20 years later, 15 years later, it's going to be the Chinese or maybe somebody else. We never know. So it's always someone else every time, okay? So we have not been the bad guy all the time. So please, don't give us credit. Okay. Plus, the fact is, violence is a human thing. It's not only an Islamic thing. Because if you read throughout history, all the atrocities that have been or have been committed, they were committed by different people. Because terrorism and violence has no faith. Okay? So, even if Muslims didn't even exist, you still have World War I, World War II. Protestants and Catholics would have fought in the Middle Ages. The Titanic would have still sunk in 1920s, okay? Muslims have absolutely nothing to do with this. And Hitler and Stalin and all these people, okay? It is true that there are some violent Muslims, but again, Muslims don't have a monopoly on violence, okay? Show me one ethnicity or one faith that doesn't have blood on its hands, okay? The only difference is some have more blood than others. This is the only difference, okay? But humans like to manipulate and take advantage of other people, so they look for excuses. So maybe the excuse is a difference in religion, maybe it's a difference in ethnicity or color. So because killing another human being is not an easy thing, so you always need an excuse to justify whatever you're doing. There are some violent passages in the Quran that are manipulated by people like ISIS and other horrible groups out there. And if you look at these chapters, in chapter 2 and chapter 3, 47 and 48, there are some certain passages in the Quran, but you have to understand them in their historical context. They talk about specifically about conflicts between early Muslims and the people of Mecca 1,500 years ago who were in Saudi Arabia. So these are limited to these groups at the time. We'll give an example in a minute. You will also read in the Quran that there are some passages that talk about kindness to non-Muslims. Like this chapter in chapter 60, verses 8 and 9. It says that God does not prevent Muslims from being kind and nice to non-Muslims as long as they are not at war. So this is the only condition that the Quran puts on it. You will find passages that say you're allowed to fight non-Muslims. Some passages will say don't fight them. Some passages will say fight other Muslims. Some passages will say don't fight other Muslims. So how do we understand this? Well, it all boils to one thing. Boils down to one thing. If someone attacks you, you have the right to defend yourself regardless of the attacker's faith. When you wake up in the middle of the night and there's a burglar in the house, you don't usually ask them for a photo ID before you shoot them. It doesn't matter if the thief is a Muslim, Unitarian, it doesn't really matter. And if someone is good to you, you have to be exceptionally good to them, regardless of their faith. So faith actually has nothing to do with it. Back in 1990, when Iraq invaded Kuwait, do you think Kuwaitis had to defend themselves, even by killing Iraqis who are other Muslims? Of course, yes. Everybody has the right to defend themselves. Of course, these passages in the Quran talk about fighting back in self-defense, making peace with the enemy. If the enemy asks for peace, and if the peace treaty is violated, then you have the right to continue the fight. This is probably the most quoted verse in the Quran. Kill them wherever you find them. So now when you get a copy of the Quran, you read them, kill them wherever you find them. So if they see me at Frisco or Walt, they're going to shoot me, right? All you need to do is just read a verse before and a verse after. It says something completely different. So the verses here from chapter 2, verses 190 to 192, they basically say, fight only against those who start a fight against you. So you don't start a war, but if someone attacks you, so defend yourself by attacking them and kill them wherever you find them. This is explained in some other verses in the Quran, in the battlefield. So it is not like you go and kill innocent women and children, and so on and so forth. Then it says don't kill them around the Kaaba in Mecca in Saudi Arabia. So it talks exclusively about a particular place. But if the enemy ceases fighting against you, so you have to give them peace. So we have to read the whole thing. Taking things out of context is not a strange thing. People do it all the time. So they take something out of context and make the speaker look horrible, but if you put it back in context, it's just something completely different. Now you look at this example. Prophet Muhammad says, "Don't think I have come to bring peace to this world. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword." It's a terrible statement, right? But Prophet Muhammad didn't say this. This was said by Jesus in the book of Matthew, right? There's also this statement by Prophet Muhammad: "As for those enemies of mine who don't want me as a king over them, bring them and slaughter them under my feet." Again, Prophet Muhammad didn't say this. That was Jesus in the book of Luke. All you need to do, put it back in context, read a verse before and a verse after. It's a parable. It talks about something completely different. Then, "Jehovah is a man of war. Jehovah is his name." That was a song sung by Moses when they left Egypt with the people, the children of Israel. Put it back in context. So it's something completely different. Even at the time of war, Muslims had respect for the human life. So when the Prophet was sending the army to fight against the people of Mecca who were attacking the Muslims in a different city in Medina, he told the army, don't kill an old man or a woman or a child, and don't mutilate dead bodies of the enemy, but be courteous and equitable, for Allah loves those who deal with equity. In other narrations, he said, don't cut down trees and don't kill animals and don't attack people at night. Now this leads us to talk about the concept of jihad in Islam. Linguistically, jihad means to strive and to do your best. So in Arabic, we say, "Atalib mujtahid," a very hard-working student. So we use it in our daily language. So technically, jihad means two things. One, to struggle against your own self. Because when the charity box is moving around and you want to give 10 bucks, then something will whisper to you and say, "You lost your mind. 10 bucks, why? Who is going to pay your bills? Who is going to, you know, put food on the table? You know, who is going to take care of..." Some other people in the community will take care of that. They will pay. But you just take care of your family, man. Okay? If you still go ahead and put $10 in the charity box, we call this in Islam jihad. Because you make jihad against your lower self, the evil desires that we have. So fighting against greed and all these bad qualities is called jihad in Islam. So the second type of jihad, of course, is jihad at the time of war. If someone attacks your country, you have the right in any system, whether it's a secular system or a divine system, to fight in self-defense. So if Canada, for example, is attacked by Russia or any other country, then everybody has to go out and defend their countries. And Muslims would be making jihad for Canada. They will be the first people in the line. But nobody's going to blow themselves up for Canada, okay? They would just fight for the liberty and the security of this country. So jihad is actually, is not a bad thing, but it has been hijacked by the bad people, okay? So the equivalence in English would be patriotism. This is the concept the people use. Why don't Muslims talk about other bad Muslims, the bad apples in the Muslim community? Actually, a lot of Muslims speak up, they stand out against violence in the Muslim community, in our talks in the mosques. And Muslim organizations always condemn violence against innocent people, women and children. Last month, there was this statement issued by the Council of Imams, which is one of the highest Muslim councils in Canada. So they said they condemn ISIS and violence against innocent people. It's very clear. And they said that ISIS, to Islam, ISIS is like the Ku Klux Klan to Christianity. Okay, so these groups exist in every faith, so we should not take a tiny minority within a faith and generalize, generalize about other people as well. The problem is, you will never see this on CBC News, okay? Because the media is not always interested in good news. They say, they have this term in journalism, if it bleeds, it leads. So wherever there is violence, people will always be... How many planes land safely every day in the world? 100,000? But all of they ignore this, they only focus on the one plane that crashes. Why? Because this is how you bring readership to your news. If you talk about flowers and engagement, everybody is happy, the butterflies, and nobody is going to read your... But if there is blood, everybody will be happy to read, right? Well, number three, Sharia. Of course, Sharia is misunderstood, so people always say, okay, Muslims would like to take over the world and replace the constitution with Sharia. So again, you will get this perception after you watch Fox News for 5 minutes. So for 5 years, I have been tortured by having to watch Fox News every day for my PhD. Okay? So I always say that now I have two things that I didn't have back then. I mean, 2008 when I started my PhD dissertation. Blood pressure and heart attacks. Okay? Watching Bill O'Reilly and John Hannity, Sean Hannity every day talk about, oh, Muslims are trying to take over the world. They are attacking us. They hate us because we are the best. We have democracy. We are a rich country. Well, how do you call yourself rich if you owe like 500 trillion billion to China? You are not rich. And number two, if you talk about your democracy and Muslims hate you because of your democracy, why Muslims don't hate Japan or other countries in Europe? Simply because nobody is bothering them and they are not killing anyone. It's that simple. Just people leave people alone and everybody will love you, okay? It's very simple. So if you watch Fox News, then your perception of the Sharia is, it is the law that chops people's heads off. That's it. It's very simple. But Islamically, Sharia is based on the teachings of the Quran and the teachings of the Prophet. You can't just go on Amazon.com and buy a Sharia book. It doesn't even exist. Okay? There's no such thing called Sharia book. So it's the teachings of the Quran and the Sunnah. And it deals with everything. From marriage, to divorce, inheritance, social relations, relations between Muslims and non-Muslims, war and peace, the life in this world and the next life. And of course, it talks about punishments. If you do something good, you'll be rewarded. If you do something wrong, you'll be punished. So what do you do if you get a speeding ticket in Canada? Do they give you candy? Do they take you out to Tim Hortons? They charge you, right? So you have to pay for whatever offenses you make. It's everywhere. So if in Islam the punishments are deterrent, and they are meant to be for criminals. They are not intended for good people like me and you. So if you break the law, you suffer. Khalas, okay? And I personally, I don't have a problem if someone rapes a woman. I don't have a problem with them if they are executed. And this is what the Sharia says. If there is a serial killer, I don't have a problem with that person being put to death. I think this is justice. You put them in jail for a few years, then they are out in the streets and they kill other people. Where is the justice in this? And of course, The irony is, a lot of countries in Europe, they think that Canadians are barbaric because they have the capital punishment, right? Just like they think they have it. What did they do with Timothy McVeigh? Did I say Canada? No, sorry, I was talking about America. Sorry. Sorry. I'm still sore from yesterday. Sorry. So they think that the American law is... Sorry, my bad. Sorry, I apologize. Canadians are the nicest people in the face of this world. And The only terrible Canadian I met since I've been here for the last 3 years was an American. Okay. So, yeah. Sorry, Dave. Sorry. But anyway, so they have capital punishment in America. So Europeans think, oh, Americans are, you know, they are barbaric, just like Muslims, because they have the capital punishment. Okay. But again, there are punishments in every system, wherever you go. Are Muslims trying to force Sharia on Canadians and Americans and Europeans as well? Well, if someone says this, because Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly, they ask this question all the time. So if someone says, are Muslims trying to force Sharia on Canadians? So ask them this question. Does the Sharia apply to tiny minorities of non-Muslims in majority Muslim countries? Like in Egypt, in Morocco, other countries in the Muslim world? The answer is no. Sharia only applies to Muslims in Muslim countries where Sharia is applied. We said at the beginning there are 57 Muslim countries in the world. Only very, very few of them apply Sharia. Most Muslim countries that you hear about are secular. Their laws are mostly derived from Napoleon laws and European laws. So just go and Google it, okay? Most of the laws in the Muslim world, they apply only to family laws like marriage, divorce, and inheritance. That's it. But most punishments in Muslim countries are European punishments. Like to put someone in jail for killing someone or for rape, all these things, they come from Europe. Okay? So this is the answer. But Sharia has so many things in common with the American Constitution, with the Canadian Constitution. Read the Charter of Rights. It is very compatible with what Islam teaches about respecting other people and kindness. But the problem is, some people don't know, other people don't apply. Number four, do Muslims hate homosexuals? Number one, very briefly, I got like 5-7 minutes to go. Yeah, alhamdulillah. So from a religious perspective, we believe that in Islam, and as well as in the Quran and the Bible, homosexuality is a sin. Okay, we are all sinners. We make mistakes. Everybody makes a different mistake. Okay, we're all human beings. We're not angels. Number two, we believe that somebody's sexuality is a private thing. Why would I go and take the mic and talk about my sexual life with my wife or whatever? Okay, so we need to treat our sexuality just like we treat our bank accounts. You don't share them with everyone. Keep that for yourself. What benefit do you get from sharing that information with other people? Keep it for yourself. In Islam, we differentiate between the person and the act. We don't hate any human being. But we hate something that is not acceptable in our faith. So for example, if someone smokes, for example, my father used to smoke. Did I hate him? The answer is no. But did I hate smoking? Of course, yes. Okay? If a Muslim, for example, they drink alcohol or they don't pray, do I hate them? The answer is no. But they hate the fact that they drink or they are not nice to other people or they don't pray? Of course, yes. So I hate the act itself, but I never hate another human being. The Quran teaches that humans are all brothers and sisters from the same father and the same mother. Whether we realize this or not, whether you are from Asia or Africa or Europe, we come from the same father and the same mother. Oppression of women in Islam, and this is the last point. We have to, a lot of people in the media, they really confuse Islam as a religion with the cultures in the 57 different countries that I spoke about. I think that Islam is a perfect faith. Muslims are not a perfect people. So we shouldn't take Muslims to judge Islam. We should take Islam to judge Muslims. So it should be this way. Most of the injustices in the Muslim world are because of people are not applying Islam, evidently. So if Islam, for example, says, like in my case, for example, my mother. In the Quran, if you read chapter 4, the women, it talks about the rights of women in marriage, in divorce, in inheritance. This is what the chapter talks about. So we'll talk about this in a second, the shares that a woman gets in inheritance. But in some Muslim countries, they don't give women a share of inheritance. They think if you give your wife, your daughter, a share of your inheritance to her husband, so your land or your estate goes to someone who is a stranger, someone who is not from the family. So they don't give women their share, they just give them a light compensation. So this is what happened with my mother. She didn't get a share of inheritance, but Islam gets the blame, although Islam says you have to give them a share. If some women in the Muslim country are not allowed to drive a car, then Islam is to blame, although there is no problem in Islam for women to drive a car. In some Muslim countries, women are not allowed to get an education like in Afghanistan, but Islam, as David said, it's an obligation on every Muslim male or female to get an education. But people don't do what Islam says, but at the end of the day, people confuse the culture with Islam. So these cultures, they are very tight, and I would say they are not Islamic to start with. But people always confuse these cultures with Islam. With that being said, there are Muslims in some other countries in the Muslim world who live a fantastic life. In some places, like in Cairo and in Dubai, more women make it to college than men. And the ratio is even higher than in some European countries. So we have to also look for the good side. Also in Islam, we believe that women and men are equal but different. Different in the sense that they are not identical. In the same way that me and Desmond, we are not identical. We are equal, but we are not identical. So in Islam, men and women are equal before God and before the law. They are different so they can complete each other and not fight with one another. But we believe that men and women, they are different psychologically and they are different physically. And this is what the science says. Physically, if you want a proof, just when you go to the store, you will find there is restroom for men and restroom for women. Why? Because they have physical differences, okay? If you think they are the same, you will fail your biology class a big time, okay? And they are psychologically different because scientists, psychologists, and these are not my words, they believe that men and women are different psychologically. Women tend to be more emotional and men tend to be more rational. I'm not saying that women are crazy, but the emotions, they judge things with their emotions. So, and you get different reactions from women than men. You just... Okay. 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 I'll give you a proof. The Roche approach. This is the proof. Because they're psychologically different, you get different reactions from both to the same issue, right? So, if you and your husband are in the kitchen, you're cooking, and there's a mouse or a roach in the kitchen, do the mouse or the roach get the same reaction from both of you? Different reactions, right? One of the two will jump out of the window. I'm not going to say who. The other one will just grab a knife or a gun, just, okay. But at the end of the day, they are equal before God and before the law. They are not. They are different in the fact that they are not identical before God and the law. They are the same, okay? They are twin brothers, as David says in the correspondence. So when we talk about the scarf, some people take this as a sign of oppression for women. But the scarf is not actually an Islamic thing. It's an Abrahamic thing. It is shared by the three Abrahamic faiths. You will find the teaching about this in the Bible as well. Islam gave women the right to inheritance, to have a say in marriage, and to own property, and so on and so forth. We believe that men and women, theoretically, are equal in North America. But when you come to reality, there's some steps for women, at least from the government, so equality will be achieved. So the official numbers in the U.S. say that for every dollar that a man makes, a woman makes 77 cents. Okay? So they don't get equal pay for the same job. So these are, official numbers from the American government. Back in the 1920s, in North America, women were fighting just to vote in elections. Around that time in Egypt, the 1930s and 40s, we have female members of parliament in Egypt. Okay? So we have to look at the whole history to see the full picture. Who are these guys? Yes, the presidents of the United States. How many women do we see there? Why? Because maybe they are not yet ready to have a female president, although they are equal. In Canada, Kim Campbell was the first female prime minister. She became prime minister when Mr. Mulroney had to retire. They did an election like 3-4 months later, and she lost a big time. So we still are looking for the first elected female in Canada. But if you look at the Muslim world, just look at the last 10-15 years, so many women were elected prime minister and president. Like in Indonesia, the largest Muslim country, Megawati Sukarno was elected president. Pakistan, Benazir Bhutto, the late, was elected. Bangladesh, two women. Turkey was elected prime minister. And so on and so forth throughout history. In inheritance, it is not true that a woman in Islam gets half the share of her brother. This is only one case. There are so many different cases. So what people do, and this is the last point. So what they do, they just take one case and generalize. So women in Islam get one of three different shares. It depends on the person's closeness to the deceased. It has nothing to do with gender. So younger generations, young people in the family will get more. Old people will get less. Those who are close to the deceased will get more. Those who are distant will get less. This is how it works. Gender has nothing to do with it. So in a couple of cases, the girl will get half of the share of her brother. Why? Because the brother has to provide for the family if there is no supporter for the family. The lady doesn't have to pay a penny in Islam to provide for the family. Even if she goes to work, she keeps her money to herself. She doesn't have to provide unless she wants to. And when she gets married, she doesn't have to pay anything in marriage. The man has to pay everything. This is what Islam teaches, unless the woman is willing to share the expenses with the man. But in some other cases, they get equal shares, 50-50. In some cases, women, it depends if the woman is a mother or a daughter or a sister, sometimes women get more money in inheritance than men. So it depends on the age and the closeness to the deceased. And these are examples. No problem. We just spoke about this. Thank you very much. Thanks.